race is a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Every day, at least once a day, I find myself in awe over how absolutely screwed we'd be if the Democrats had won another presidential term. To understand what China had planned for the Strait of Hormuz, eventually, once Iran was nuclear-armed, but really for the whole world, you've got to read this article by the Atlantic Council. Here's where things were in May of 2025, after the $100 billion infusion of cash into Iran by Joe Biden, which was then spun off, a lot of it given to the Houthis, who then turned to China to supply them with the most modern missile and drone tech. They'd used it to seize the upper hand in the Red Sea, where 12 to 15% of global maritime trade passes every day, and roughly 20 to 30% of all global container traffic. Now, I know this is wonky and boring, but stay tuned because this gets crazy. Okay, back to the Atlantic Council. So China is not only providing the hardware for the Houthis to menace shipping, they're also using their satellites to coordinate attacks. What did that add up to? Quote, while overall shipping traffic through the Red Sea has plunged by nearly 70% since the Houthi attacks began, the proportion of China-linked tonnage has surged, a silent testament to the effectiveness of the arrangement. The impact on European economies has been severe. Major European shipping companies have been forced to reroute vessels around the Cape of Good Hope. This creates an artificial competitive advantage for Chinese goods, which continue to flow unimpeded through the Red Sea corridor, while European competitors face delays and higher expenses. German and French manufacturers are already reporting supply chain disruptions and lost market share to Chinese competitors, a tangible economic victory for Beijing, which was achieved primarily through proxy conflict rather than direct trade competition with the United States. The Atlantic Council continued, just spelling it out. This is a liberal organization, too. China's support for Iran strategically allows Beijing to reach its objectives without direct involvement or accountability. Yeah, and I would add with violence. The headline says it all. How China turned the Red Sea into a strategic trap for the U.S. And in addition to subsidizing the Houthis' substantial bank account to make it all possible, yes, Biden did eventually put naval vessels out there for show. But again, they did nothing, which is what China pays the Biden family to do. How can you measure nothing again? While our naval vessels were out there, overall shipping traffic through the Red Sea plunged by nearly 70% because we let China and the Houthis do whatever the hell they wanted. This was the plan for the world's shipping routes. China would first use violence through its proxies to control the flow of goods and advantage its goods. Then it would dictate economic policy, namely, you're not passing through unless you do trade in yuan or some kind of Iranian Bitcoin. Around the same time, something else happened. And most people on our side even missed this because it was so sparsely reported. Remember, Donald Trump said he was going to kick out the 300,000 Chinese visa holders in the country, many of whom are PhD level folks doing research at U.S. companies who are stealing our technology, but a lot of them just taking premier spots in our colleges. He said he was going to kick them out. They were done. And the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, played the rare earths card because at the time they controlled 90% of the rare earth minerals, saying, okay, we're just going to withhold the rare earth minerals. Good luck. Do you remember what happened? Donald Trump had no choice but to bow to China, reversing himself, doing a 180 that still chafes his base, having to come out and say, no, I love Chinese students. They're awesome. We totally want them. Why'd he do it? A lot of people raged at him online, but I explained it to you at the time. He had no choice. We need those rare earths for our tech, but we also need it just to produce cars. I really wish they'd strip the digital out of cars. I hate the digital in my car. Folks, I'd pay a premium at this point for just a standard combustion fuel engine with nothing digital in it except maybe the clock. Anyway, by May, we were looking at our top auto manufacturers having to idle their lines within 6 weeks. That's how much of a disaster this is. Now, I've done other podcasts on what Trump's done since then, opening the first new rare earth mine in the United States of America in over 25 years. They'd been trying to get permitted through a 15-year process. Trump accelerated it. We're doing good things. And by the way, we have all the rare earth minerals we need. We just have to get Democrat regulations out of the way in order to get them. Trump is doing a lot of that, but that's a different podcast. I want to focus on this because PJ Media nails this today. So Xi Jinping plays the rare earth card, forcing Donald Trump to slow his role on decoupling from China. Well, this year, with everything I've just told you, Trump just played the oil card against China. First in Venezuela, cutting off roughly 20% of China's oil, then in Iran. And now for China, payback is hell. Because Trump and Hegseth just took the Strait of Malacca. Wait, you mean the Strait of Hormuz, right? Well, that too. But no, also the Strait of Malacca. Yeah, it runs through, goes between Malaysia and Indonesia, and 80% of China's oil imports pass through there. In fact, the Strait of Hormuz, which abuts Iran, is actually the second highest volume oil choke point on Earth. What's the first? You got it, Strait of Malacca. And China had been intimidating, but also cozying it up to Indonesia for a very long time. How critical is the Strait of Malacca? 25 to 40% of global maritime trade goes through there. It's a critical artery, especially for Asia. Well, out of nowhere, with little fanfare, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth announced he had hosted the Indonesian defense minister, and together they had cut a major defense cooperation partnership. Yeah, we're going to be running defensive maneuvers together. Left unsaid is exactly who this, quote, major defense cooperation partnership will be defending against, but it's China. David Strom puts it this way. Trump is shoring up alliances in Asia, now the center of gravity of the world economy, and gaining control of the major strategic choke points of world trade, especially in energy. Payback for that rare earth mineral deal? Yeah, that is hell. But there's something new and great going on here. Countries, like people, tend to gravitate toward power. And they didn't just have this major meeting and agree to the security partnership. Remember, just last week, Indonesia was one of the countries considering paying protection payments to China or also to Iran and doing its trade in not dollars, but Chinese yuan. That was the demand for safety. So obviously we now know Indonesia was talking to us and was talking to China. They chose us. This is a humiliation for China. Now look what else is going on here, folks. While Democrats and the Euroweenies take the side of the Iranian mullahs and China, Singapore is with us. Their foreign minister, in a parliamentary statement, absolutely blistered China and the Iranians, saying, "We will not negotiate with the Iranians, nor will we be part of normalizing a practice that violates the law of the sea." Yeah, in other words, we're not paying protection payments. That's BS. And then he said, look, Singapore overlooks a strait that's 2 nautical miles wide. The width of the passage in the Strait of Hormuz is 21 miles. He says, and yet Singapore has never even considered seizing this opportunity to violate international law by charging tolls. And then he says, I will not negotiate with the Iranian foreign minister as we are at a moment of affirming the international law of the sea in the face of an absurd situation that would set a precedent leading to numerous consequences that would not leave international trade in a good position. They were asked to choose. And they chose us, Singapore, Indonesia. Now, right about now, I know some of you are thinking the same thing I'm thinking watching all of this. I'm an isolationist. If you've listened to me for a long time, you know, I didn't want to send a single dollar to boost Ukraine in the war. And I've been that way since the beginning, not just when it was popular. But folks, we don't have a choice. Because if we do nothing, folks, the Panama Canal almost fell into Chinese hands through corruption and bribery. The Red Sea did, and that route did fall into Chinese hands via the Houthis. This was their plan. So we have three options. We can either fight now, fight later, and you can't go with fight later because Democrats might be in charge. They'll be funding all of this to China's benefit. Or we can be ruled by China. Now, what do I mean ruled by China? China's not going to walk into the White House. Well, wait, they kind of did with Joe Biden, didn't they? Ruled by China. What does that mean? Violence used to key choke points to dictate economic policy. Which ships can get through, which ones have to pay tolls that make their products more expensive, thus helping Chinese products, and ultimately the destruction of the dollar that I've been screaming about for weeks. Now, what would all this look like if the Democrats and the Euroweenies were in charge? How would we be treated on the sea? Like this. The British Royal Navy was just absolutely humiliated in its own waters by Russia. And the headline is brutal in the UK Telegraph. Exclusive. Putin mocks Starmer, he's the prime minister, with warship in the channel. Russian frigate escorts sanctioned tankers through British waters despite the prime minister's vow to seize the vessels. He talked tough about a month ago. I think he was trying to sound like Trump to improve his numbers and dared Russia. He said, look, we're going to seize your vessels. You are not bringing illegal sanctioned oil through our waters. You're not going to do it. So Russia said, really? Cool. So they sent the vessel carrying the oil, flanked it with warships, and went right through the English Channel. You should see the photos of this, of the Royal Navy ship following behind the Russian frigate, doing not a damn thing. And then behind that, the journalists on a rented boat filming the entire thing. In response, Ian Crowd writes, in responsible statecraft, the Royal Navy could only muster an auxiliary fuel tanker to follow it helplessly. In fact, a regular pattern is forming in which the Royal Navy deploys vessels that are overmatched by better armed Russian naval escorts. Folks, you're looking at your future right there. And the Biden administration had already begun to allow China and the Houthis to do it to us in the Red Sea. In fact, I did several podcasts documenting, because there were articles about it, how China was openly caught not just arming the Houthis, but providing logistical support, mainly targeting with its satellites of our ships, of European ships, and Biden let them. Finally, folks, you have things like this. For the last several weeks, Israel's bombed the living hell out of Hezbollah in Lebanon. Hezbollah is basically an Iranian army on Lebanon's soil. Europe completely condemned the bombing by Israel in a desperate attempt to save Hezbollah. Well, France has been a protectorate of Lebanon for a very long time, and they've been on the ground there trying to manage the Hezbollah situation through UN and all of this kind of stuff. It's been a disaster. Well, the leaders of Lebanon did an incredibly brave thing this week, something we haven't seen in 30 years. They sat down with Israel and Marco Rubio at the State Department. You have to understand, for the leaders of Lebanon, Hezbollah threatened to kill them if they negotiate with Israel. This is an incredible act of bravery just showing up. And it was clear at the meeting, Israel and the leadership of Lebanon are on the same side. They want Hezbollah destroyed. Well, folks, in a last-minute act of desperation, the head of France, Macron, invited all of these people to have the talks in Paris, to hold them himself, made multiple phone calls to the leadership. And you know what they did? They not only declined and held it at the State Department, and it was historic. Again, Lebanon and Israel haven't sat down together in more than 30 years, but France was not even invited. It was an incredible coup for Marco Rubio, truly historic. The media would be crowing about it if Joe Biden had pulled it off. But here's Israeli Ambassador Yichiel Leiter explaining why the French were not just not invited, but not allowed. Quote, we certainly don't want the French anywhere near these negotiations. We'd like to keep them as far away as possible from pretty much everything, particularly peace negotiations. Lebanon felt the same way, especially after France condemned Israel for bombing in Lebanon. Why else might they have been excluded? Folks, last week, look at all the Western countries that nominated Iran to sit on the UN Committee for Women's Rights, Human Rights, Disarmament, and Terrorism Prevention. Listen to this list. Nominated Iran, Canada, UK, Australia, France, Spain, Germany, and Norway. Folks, this is dancing on the graves of the 42,000 dead and mocking them. The UN, with the blessing of those European countries, just put Iran on the Human Rights Council. This, right after the massacre in the streets of Iran? I mean, folks, the fact that in Lebanon, they're legitimately terrified. And folks, the left is wringing its hands. Oh, no. What will we do without the Euroweenies? They won't like us. Oh, no. But folks, I don't think even Americans realize how bad this is. Do you realize that the prime minister, the head of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, went to China last week, stood up and called for better relations with China and said, and I quote, "I firmly believe it is in the interest of both Spain and Europe to strengthen ties with China," unquote. How do you remain allies with that? You can't. This whole thing isn't falling apart because Trump said some choicely worded things to the Euroweenies that happened to be true. This is falling apart because it's not possible for us to have a relationship with them. Even worse, folks, the head of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, urged China on Chinese soil to take a greater global leadership role. What does he want? China blocking more major shipping routes? Like a gangster and charging tolls with what? Iranian proxies shooting at people? I mean, I don't know. Marco Mikkelsen, who is an Estonian politician, actually tweeted about this. He said, "Do our Spanish friends and allies really understand what they're calling for?" Again, this is also astonishing when you consider who China's major number one ally is, Russia. David Strom nails it in his piece this week. Will Europe's only ally in the Middle East turn out to be Iran? He writes, "The European Union has placed a huge bet on Iran coming out on top in its war with the United States and Israel. In all but name, the big countries in Europe have chosen Iran and to a great extent China as their preferred winners. They've spoken about closer relations with China, barred the U.S. from using bases and even airspace, and are now siding with Iran in its negotiations with the United States, particularly in its demand that Hezbollah be left alone." The thing is, he writes, aside from perhaps Turkey and Iran, no country in the Middle East is happy with their choices. Folks, had Donald Trump never been elected, you know, the second time, can you imagine? We'd be in lockstep, the Democrats, if they were in leadership, in lockstep with these Euroweenies, in lockstep with Hezbollah, funding the whole thing. And we'd probably already have lost control of the Panama Canal. Remember, when Rubio and Trump, is one of the first things they did, stepped in, they were already honestly, openly talking about charging U.S. ships more for passage through the canal we built. And Democrats were fine with it. Which is why I say all the time, folks, in so many ways, across so many subjects, the next, you know, 5 years, roughly, are going to shape the future of human history, literally the future of humanity. And it's all going to come down in the world to whether we can win the 28 election and get 4 more years to cement an amazing, freer, safer new world, or the Democrats are going to win and we're going to capitulate to China and every awful power on the earth. Never has there been a starker fork in the road. It could be spectacular on every axis. Times we haven't seen in decades. Good times. Or it could be catastrophically tragic if all of this were reversed. China is waiting for us to decide. American voters, whose side we're on.
Battleground America with Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.